Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
What's going on, guys? You're listening to the Everyday Struggle podcast. I'm Nadeska, here with my guys DJ Academics and Wayno, running through some of the biggest stories of the week and also discussing some of the benefits and challenges of artist-manager relationships. After dropping two albums last year, Future took a little hiatus and returned with Beast Mode 2 on July 6th, but the guys weren't feeling it as much as the original tape with Zaytoven, which dropped back in 2015. A lot to talk about here, but one, people thought it was ironic that this dropped on Ciara and Russell Wilson's anniversary. But besides that, did you guys enjoy this project? Is it everything you wanted from Future?
Future petty. That guy is petty, man. Future, it would be like one of them top commenters on the Shade Room. He is petty as fuck.
Damn.
But the project's cool, y'all. I'm not gonna lie, I expect a little bit more.
Yeah, honestly, like Zaytoven and Future is not my favorite thing. Like, I was just going over like the discography earlier, and like Beast Mode is one of my favorite joints with Future. And like, I love Future and Metro, and I love Future and 808 Mafia more. You know, but I mean, it's cool. It's not special to me. Like, yeah.
Well, when I think about Beast Mode, just like when you think about Monster. Like, you think about that run. And you know what? For a lot of artists, we as fans, we try to match everything they do to when they were on that run. That right. Magical run where they can't do no wrong. Every song's a fucking smash. They're just dropping it. Like, it's crazy. And Future now, I think he's in a different space in his career.
Yeah.
Like, Future, it felt like Future personally felt like he had to drop a song every 30 seconds. Right. Like, he couldn't, like, yo, let's get him out. Now he's a much different artist. The project is cool. I felt like it lacked the impact.
Absolutely.
I felt like when Beast Mode dropped, that shit hit the streets running.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like I was hearing it everywhere, even if you didn't hear it yourself. I feel like this dropped and there's a couple dope songs on it. You know, the Wi-Fi lit joint, that's super popping.
Yeah, some songs on there.
It hasn't had that impact yet. And me listening to it, I'm like, okay.
Well, I mean,
I was just going to say, more pressure also when you make it a sequel. I feel like people's expectations are immediately going to be pretty high.
I'm not a fan of sequel albums or projects only because, like, you can't recreate that chemistry or that mold you was in when you did it, no matter just because you're using the same producer. And correction, my favorite.
You won't watch The Throne 2? You know you do.
Do I want to watch The Throne 2?
Pass. Yeah. Jay's never going to do that album.
Yeah, it's probably never going to happen.
We're
but
good
I was
now.
I mean, I would love to hear Jay and Kanye again one day, but I don't.
How?
If it's not right, if it's not the same, like if it's not a continuation of that. But correction, my favorite tape from Future was like Monster. But another thing that I haven't listened to that I heard is is Future heavy is the Superfly soundtrack because mm-hmm. Remember the Free Band Gang tape? Mm-hmm. Like it was kind of like that. You know what I mean? So I'm gonna go listen to that because I haven't checked that out in a minute yet. But it was cool. Like, I'm not mad at it, but it doesn't wow me.
If Future's past run is any indication of what's to come, we're likely getting more music soon. But a series of tweets from the Atlanta rapper makes it clear that he feels like he's not getting enough credit for his work.
I matched up how I felt about this particular project with how I felt about his last called project, and then I matched it up with a Twitter rant that you went on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his Twitter rant was cool.
And, you know, he did Super Slimy with Thug, the Superfly soundtrack as well, yeah. Right? And before that, he had his two albums that dropped back-to-back weeks, Future and Hendrix. And as like when I saw that this Twitter rant, the only thing that came to mind, and Future's my guy. Mm-hmm. I call him Future Vandross. Okay. Only thing that came to mind is like Future might be watching the game like go past him. And what I mean by that is that like you could see when an artist is pointing out like, yo, remember I birthed all y'all, like still love me. Like he wasn't getting that love, and I was looking on social media, he wasn't getting all the love like he normally gets.
So
you know,
he said,
it used to be a Future hype.
Right, but the thing is, also, so much music has been coming out, right? He's been a little bit quiet. It's not like he dropped a few singles and, like, led up to it, right? It came out of nowhere. He said, I gracefully gave you a style to run with like it was your own. Thank you. Please scroll down. I can't see the tweets.
Your titles, your flows came from me. Your ad-libs, mine. One of them is saying your hoes came from me. And by the way, I think he started off by saying, He said, I'm tired of being humble, all you little niggas. And
he said, thank me.
I'm still trying to figure out who he's talking to because he put no name, address, zip code on this. But
it's kind of, you know what, the whole thing with this is, like, I had a conversation with Styles P one time, and Styles P was saying, like now in music, he's like an elder statesman. So he's kind of, like, more on the side of ushering in the new guys and like kind of like helping them understand where they need to go to have longevity. And the whole thing about when I seen this with Future, I'm just like, yo, you don't really need to do any of that shit. Like, you don't need to say any of that, because when you look at where Atlanta's at right now, it is a ton of new guys that's running and killing shit. But Future's older than all of them, right? And this is a young man's game. No matter what, like LeBron is not always gonna be LeBron. Kobe's not always gonna be Kobe.
Now. Like, hold up now.
Nah, seriously. I mean, it comes a point where I don't think Future's his skill has declined, but I just think that we're in a time where everybody's looking for the next new thing, and he gave us so much. Like, when I look at this discography, I mean, he dropped more shit in the past 5 years than people have dropped in 10 or 15 years. So it's like he gave so much. I don't think he burnt himself out, but he gave so much that now everybody's like, all right, well, let me jump on this new guy, jump on that new guy. And Future, even with all of that said, he still has his space. Like, you can't move him out of his space. And I think he's a legend for what he does. But that rant was just kind of, that shit threw me off. And I'm like, well, he don't have to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I say impact. Because, you know, like, we could look at numbers and, like, he's projected to do, like, 60, 65,000. But it's a mixtape.
Yeah, it's not.
You know what I mean? Like, no press rollout. Just threw it out there. And I do believe he's one of these artists that he's graduated to the point where he'll always do good sales-wise.
Yeah.
But will it have that impact where you hear everybody bumping it? Because he's making it for a particular crowd. Yeah. Like, trap niggas is for a particular crowd, even though everybody plays it. And the impact is when you go to the club or wherever, everybody bumping that Future. I don't know with this particular project. And artists, I do believe they feel that. Sometimes that frustration comes with probably saying, wait, y'all don't love me no more? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Nicki's had that a couple times.
Absolutely.
Like, yo, y'all don't fuck with me.
Like, even with Future, I'm looking for more, like, for me, as much as he's put out, I'm looking to see more shit from Casino. Because, his artist Casino, he had a lot of dope shit, like, on Future tapes, and I never really see him get to that point. Then you got Zoe. You got the dude Joe Moses. Like, he got a few people on
Future. Dope boy?
Yeah, he got a few dope people. But I think that he put out so much, he hasn't had the time to put into their shit. So it'd be cool to see Future, like, just as an executive, focus on their shit a bit more. You know what I mean? As opposed to giving us these rants. Because Future going to do what he do every time.
I think when you're ambitious, like, anyone ambitious, you're always going to feel that frustration, like, you're not doing enough. But, like, that's in his head. I think he should know that, like, to the outside world. Even if he takes 2 years off, we're going to be here. We're, like, you know what I mean? We're never going to not listen.
Like, real shit.
And one thing I didn't realize, Future, remember all that bullshit we told you about? Stop dropping music so frequently. Fuck that. Drop it more. Because, like, honestly, when he was flooding the streets of music, and even though sometimes it felt like it was definitely quantity over quality, not saying that shit was ever whack, but you would get, like, 3-4 dope tracks off this project. Mm-hmm. And then the next project, you get 3-4 dope joints. Remember, he dropped Evil, and then it was right after DS2. It was a lot, right?
It was a run.
It still kept, like, us updated with a new one, right? when you've been absent for a while, it's like, okay. Like, this is what you back with?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And now we have a higher expectations because you haven't dropped all the time. When you're dropping all the time, we know we're going to get a bunch of misses and hopefully a hit.
And this shit is so fickle.
Meanwhile, fresh off of his double album, Scorpion, which officially has the highest first week sales of any 2018 project, Drake took the opportunity to send a few shots at Kanye on his behind bars freestyle, confirming that this beef is far from over.
Got slew, throwing up six like man had flu. I got way too big off views. Back to the basics, I won't lose. They wanna link when they got no tunes. They too worried about selling out shoes. I don't give a fuck about jeans or crap, or going to Milan or going to the Met.
Once he says they're too worried about selling out shoes, I mean, it's pretty obvious who he's talking about. Why is this still happening? Is he gonna keep going until Kanye responds? We thought it was over.
Man, he got some stuff on his chest, man. You know what? This weekend gave me a lot of clarity. Because I, just like you guys, was sitting here this whole time saying, what the fuck is going on with Drake? Get at the nigga who sent the shots, not the guy who hired the shooter. But after this weekend, and some more things coming to light, and, you know, the industry talks, man, Drake got a right to keep going at Kanye, man. Kanye, for all intents and purposes, is guilty if this is correct. And I'll explain what the stuff I'm hearing.
Espionage Act.
Ninja Act.
Kanye is a snake, okay? All right, this is what I'm hearing. Because if the story plays out right, and by the way, it's well known within people who fuck with Kanye and have worked with Kanye on these albums, and also Drake side, pretty much Drake got called, went to Wyoming to write for Kanye. He goes there and he says, you know what I mean? Like, you can imagine, you've been in the studio, rappers. Like, it's very custom that, okay, you play me some of your shit, I play you some of mine.
Right.
Drake plays the track that he intends to be, like, a big reveal. But, of course, he tells them about all the Adidas stuff. You know, they have the Adidas bond now. They're like Adidas brothers, right?
Right.
I guess.
Everything is all good. He writes Kanye a smash. He leaves. And I never understood certain things until it's all in context. Okay. So first of all, I didn't understand why he just put out Duppy Freestyle. Him and Pusha T been trading shots for years on songs, right. And he never felt like he was in a rush to put out a record after Pusha said something.
Right.
Nor did Pusha feel like he had to put out a record when Drake said something.
Mm-hmm.
This was different. But if you think about it in context, I just came from Wyoming and I helped you write a bunch of hits, right? And now, and I'm talking about Kanye, and now you produced a track for your artist, and by the way, you're the executive producer on this album,
right.
And you produced a beat, where he's almost slick dissing me about the exact thing I came out here to help you do. I came out here to help you write a track, and you have a slick line on your artist track about me and ghostwriting?
Mm-hmm. And he's done that before, so he helped him on Pablo too, right? So this has been happening for some time.
And I think also Drake probably is thinking, like, if anybody, and again, for me, even up until this weekend, I was like, man, you got to get it, Pusha. But feeling betrayed, clearly that's why he's going at Kanye. Now, let me speed this up, because I can hear Wayne, he's stretching like he want to get into the game. You see this nigga? He's like the whole type of LeBron shit. What's up with this guy, man? So he drops a Duppy Freestyle. So he's like, all right, I'm going to answer to the exact same thing that you just tried to, like, slick this me on up.
Right.
Ghostwriting. I just did the same thing for you. I came over there. Y'all ain't had no tracks.
Yeah.
And you hear he keeps bringing that up. Y'all didn't have no tunes.
Mm-hmm.
Did y'all like the Ye album? You ain't got to tell. Did you like the Ye album?
We already had our
conversation. Okay. I think we've already said no, yeah.
So,
we feel about that album.
So the standout track happens to be the track that Drake wrote. So after that, we all know what happened. Pusha T hits him with a story of Addie Dawn, and you could know. You could just imagine how flustered he is, because everything that he told Kanye came out through Addie. Pusha T.
Right.
Now, I think it's snakish.
Why did he go so hard at Pusha, though, and not harder at Ye to begin with?
Why did
if he was the one he was ultimately so mad at.
Right. Well, Duppy Freestyle was more going at Ye. There was more bars there for Ye.
But we said, though, look, see? We said that, though. We were saying that. I said that Duppy Freestyle was more at Ye than it was Pusha.
But we didn't understand why. It, nothing made sense with how Drake was moving. If anything, it gives a little context to these back and forths.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, we're looking at Drake and say, damn, you really got nothing for Pusha. But in reality, he's saying, Pusha's like a pawn, and no disrespect intended, but Pusha is a mouthpiece, or Pusha is being empowered by a guy who I helped and a guy who I thought we were close enough to not get certain things into it. Okay. So this is why I'm saying if this story is true.
Mm-hmm.
I played you my track. You know this is some, this is a reveal that I'm going to do on my album. Mm-hmm. You tell your mans. Your mans now puts it out like I'm a deadbeat dad.
Right.
Playing Border Patrol. I'm hiding a child. Now, first of all, the narrative is already ruined. So Drake is trying to come out like, he was trying to have a little dope moment. Like, you remember when Jay was rapping to Blue Ivy and all that? Like, yeah. He's trying to talk to his kid. Right. Now it's all ruined because perception is everything. Pusha T already hit him with the Maury. You're the father. You're a deadbeat. Fucks it all up.
What would be Kanye's motivation to do this? So he's had an interesting relationship with Drake over the years. They've collaborated. He's defended him, like, with the Rolling Stone article. Why would he do this, especially if you want to come back and ask for more music in the future?
And before I jump in, the last thing I'll say, because, again, this is speaking to a lot of people, because I couldn't understand. Kanye seems like a very great guy. I've heard certain things about Kanye that even I don't want to believe. You know what I mean? But jealousy comes into play. Mm. And for me, this is what I thought about before having these conversations with many people. I said, Kanye don't even seem like a jealous type of guy. He seems like he has his own lane, right? Like, he's comparing himself with, like, Warhol and people like that. He's not trying to, like, be the top rapper in the game.
But then he got on stage and called out Drake and Khaled for having too many hits, and Drake clearly felt a way about it. I feel like he addressed it in an interview. They made up. They went back to the studio, and then here we are again. That's a tough relationship.
Here you go, Nadesha.
Wait, no. Right, let's hear your take on this.
It's Kanye a snake, man. Come on, man.
It's Kanye a snake.
Or is that a snake move?
It's two ways to look at it, right? I think from your perspective of how you explained it, that's a way to look at it as a snake move, right? Another way to look at it is he rocked him to sleep. Because, and I'm gonna tell you how you
listen,
he gonna rock him to sleep, and I'm gonna tell you why. Because, all right, we all know Push and Drake been having a.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about? You insane Hollywood ass." So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
For years, whatever the case may be. Now, if you knew that your man is about to beef with somebody and you got something that he can use, why wouldn't you give it to him? He played, no matter how many records he give him or whatever he helped him with, we all know that we don't look at Kanye the same way we look at Drake in terms of rappers. Like, Drake is not a producer. Producers have always had help writing. Drake is more of a rapper. Mm-hmm. And even with that being said, I don't think that everybody has written everything for Drake. I know the motherfucker can rap, right? But that was just the bait. That's what we said from before. I said that was just the bait when we first heard the Infrared record, right?
By the way, the desk could take note. This is how Harlem niggas get down. This is how Harlem niggas get down. So you explained
it. No, listen.
I'm just telling you how shit rocked him to sleep.
I'm going to tell you how. Because look, all right. Yeah, he got the information out of him. Now, if your man, right? If your man is ready to go to war, and you know that you got some shit where you could, like, use against the dude he's going to war with, you're not going to tell him? Of course you're going to fucking tell him. Why wouldn't you? Right? Now, the whole thing is, Drake need to stop running his mouth. He need to stop thinking that him and Kanye was friends. They was having, they had a good relationship at one point in time, but remember, it soured, and then...
But it seems like they just made up. That's the thing.
When you got on More Life and all of that. But then your point comes back with the jealousy shit. Because for me, I'm like, I don't know how Kanye could ever be jealous of Drake, but I always say if it wasn't for Kanye, there'd be no Drake. He made it cool to be like a regular guy, and Drake came across as the regular guy.
And Drake has said how much he idolized him.
Absolutely. So in the end, he rocked.
Honestly, man. I do. Well, I kind of agree with that.
Yeah.
But that's a snake move. And by the way, I also look at Drake like he's a gullible fool.
Later in the week, news about Cardi B's lawsuit with her former manager got us talking about how difficult artist and manager relationships can be to maneuver. All right, so back in March, we got news that Cardi B had signed a management deal with Quality Control, and her former manager, Shaft, was not feeling that. So he's now suing her for $10 million, saying that she was engaged in breach of contract. So Cardi hit back saying, basically, he deserved to be fired. He was basically skimming money off the top. So we just want to talk about artist and manager relationships. Wayno, you have a lot of experience. You are an artist manager.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, how big of a role does a manager play in an artist's life in 2018? How has it changed over time? And when you get into situations like this, is there any way to resolve your issues amicably? Just part ways if things aren't working out?
Yeah, I mean, well, a manager, that position is like a really thankless position. I mean, you take all the credit, you get a lot of credit for all the wins, but when you take losses, like, you looked at to blame, mm-hmm. you know? And in order to be a manager, you gotta have really tough skin. To be a manager is not just managing an artist's career. It's like, yeah, their therapist, their go-to guy, their friend. You know, you gotta fill a lot of different things in that person's life. You know, it's really management. Like, you're managing their life, not just their career. So that's a tough place. But I mean, when money is like tossed around, and remember we had the conversation before with like Baby and Wayne, which is a different situation, mm-hmm. but I really felt like a lot of money and a lot of things that was going on, they probably didn't know everything when they came into the game, and a lot of shit got lost in translation. I think that in order to like get through things like this, there has to be some sort of transparency, because I know Cardi's with QC, and I don't know, you know, how true this thing is. Like, if he was, you know, let go because of her allegations, then there's really not much I could say.
Right.
But real quick, there is a space where he was the person that supported her when nobody else didn't. So, you know, that has to be held in court. I don't know what did or didn't take place.
It's like, we definitely don't know the details, so we can't speculate too much about it. Just wondering, sort of, once you're already in this relationship, when things are going sour, how much of that is just already determined in the contract? That if things end, this is what happens, or how much of it is just sort of emotional and you have to work through it on a case-by-case basis?
And what I was trying to add is that I spoke to because I ran the story, mm-hmm. and I was like, shit, this is kind of fucked up. If you're a manager stealing, that's bad.
Mm-hmm.
And some people from, I guess, like, the manager side reached out and was like, hey, listen, no, there's the other side. Like, there wasn't still enough money. There was and they had a whole list of things in their side to say, listen, pretty much we helped her get on. We did every single thing, and she got to the level that she's at, and she saw opportunities or greener pastures that didn't involve us, mm-hmm. and she just said, all right, bye. It's over. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, according to the contracts, that's not how it goes.
Yeah,
we're owed a few things mm-hmm. afterwards, even if you say, we don't want your services anymore, and that's what we're trying to fight for. So it might be two sides here.
Yeah,
I don't know.
The tough thing is that everybody's in love when there's no money. Mm-hmm. You know, and when money does change, like, money changes things for everybody. It's not always a bad thing. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of times money sharpens people up. A lot of time money leads people astray. Mm-hmm. And people feel more powerful when they have money. So ultimately, you have like sunset clauses, right? So if a manager gets fired, in the contract, and I don't know if he had one in there, but it could be like, okay, I was getting 20%. Next year, I get 15. Next year, I get 10. Next year after that, I get 5, and then we're done. But you can't just, like, stop it just because that's how you feel.
Got it.
You know? But it's a lot of different contracts, and a lot of them are on a case-by-case basis. But, I mean, ultimately, a lot of these things could be solved with conversations, but it's hard to have conversations when people get led astray. You know?
So, well, question for me to you, like, being a manager to multiple artists, mm-hmm. right, and also probably interacting with other managers,
mm-hmm.
what's more normal? A managerial relationship or even contractual relationship where it's like, when we're done, or it's more like a sunset thing? Because if that's what it is, I could imagine that this particular Shaft, mm-hmm. he's looking at it like, damn, you just got, you just did a Super Bowl commercial? You just signed what deal? All right, man, I just need five off this.
Yeah,
screw
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Let's get my money up.
Well, it depends. I think, like, sometimes everything don't got to be held to the contract. Like, a lot of these people, majority of the people that's in music come from poverty. Like, a lot of people in hip-hop come from poverty, and they make nothing into something. And I feel like even times where there's a contract in place, sometimes we just got to be real with one another. Like, well, if we didn't have nothing, then it should be nothing for me to give you something. But you got to, it takes a lot to be selfless in that space, because you get to a point where you're just playing with house money. Like, you get to a point where money's coming in from any and everywhere. And the thing is just being an honorable person at the end of the day. That's the biggest thing. Saying that Cardi isn't. I'm not speaking specifically on Cardi.
I'm just talking about in general, right? Okay, so say you're managing me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And say I'm kind of blowing up, but I'm kind of thinking, man, Wayno ain't really doing, and it could be just a matter of opinion.
Yeah.
Wayno ain't the one really doing stuff to make me blow up. It's just other things or whatever.
Right.
Man, he's not doing his job. Off that, I should just get rid of you. Right? Like, so no matter what contract is, are there contexts where you're saying you're not fulfilling your responsibility, doing nothing?
At the end of the day, that shit, your opinion don't matter. Yeah. That's why it's an agreement. Yeah. See, the thing is like, you know, when we sign up for regular jobs, like any type of regular job, we sign all this paperwork without having a lawyer there. Right. Because it's just a job. It's like, yo, I got this job. It's $20 an hour. I'm signing whatever so I can get that fee. But you don't know that you're waiving a lot of rights within that.
Since Wayno has had so much previous experience managing artists, Academics and I wanted to press him a little bit further about finding the right dynamic if you're a new artist. So Wayno, you're a brand new artist. You're about to sign your very first deal. How do you even go about finding the right manager for you?
Well, I mean, deals, it depends, because like music is so different. Before, like, you could just bring a person into the office, let them rap for like 5 minutes, and they would get a deal. Now it's more predicated on like, do they have a single? Do they have a project? Are they buzzing? So I would say, like, initially, if you're gonna get a manager, just look for somebody that can do everything that you can't do for yourself. That's my sales pitch to an artist. When they say, like, you know, what do you wanna, like, how do you wanna work with me? I'm like, listen, let me do a few things for you that you can't do for yourself, and, you know, let's take it from there. If I can't do stuff for you that you can't that you're not already doing, then what's the point of me even managing you? You don't need to be paying me. But if I can put you in a position where we're growing your brand and growing your fan base and, you know, generating dollars, then why not?
So if you're coming from a background where a lot of your friends aren't industry people, you don't necessarily have those connections off the bat, what are the first steps you would even take? Does a label help recommend people to you? Like, how do you, like, literally find the person?
It's kind of like a lot of people would like their friends to work with them, and a lot of people put their friends in position to work with them. But what I would say is I've seen a lot of entourages and a lot of friends, and they don't ask questions. I mean, if you get into a label and you're around these execs, while you're at dinner, while you're at the video shoot, you should be asking questions. You should be asking, can I come around from time to time? Can I just learn? Because that will eventually help you. And if you don't, and a label sees that you're not on it, they're going to pitch one of their homies that used to manage their last artist or artist they worked with before to work with them. So I think, like, if you're a new guy and you want to get into management, you just got to do, like, your due diligence, like I was saying the other day. Like, you got to just, you know, it's a lot of things you can read. It's a lot of things you can watch. Me, I learned on the job. So, like, I had to keep getting metaphorically punched in my face to learn when to duck. You know, I made some mistakes, but I learned how to correct my mistakes, and I learned from them. And I don't take this shit personal. It's business. So I think, you know, when you understand some of these things, they kind of help you out.
Well, at least a lot of artists I know coming up, the first thing they're going to say is that a nigga getting 20% of my money, why?
Right.
How do you even validate to an artist if you're a manager, right? Like, you should, like, I deserve this portion of right. the earnings, and you should have a manager. Because a lot of people are like, yo, my nigga, I could respond to emails and shit, I got a booking. Book and email my bio and
right.
shit. I could just put up a post saying, anybody want to book me? Hit this joint.
Right.
That's management. Why do I need to pay somebody else for that?
Well, somewhat, because I mean, an artist, that's very overwhelming, because you got to stay creative, right? And everybody isn't going to be a businessman slash artist. When you're trying to think of, you know, making new records or doing photo shoots and all these other things, it's hard to answer emails. And yeah, that's cool when you're doing it and you're not at the pro level, right? But then when things start taking off, yeah, you can have a booking email in, but how about we go get you a booking agent? How about we get you a business manager, all these different things so that we have a team of people that facilitate these opportunities for us. Now, when it comes to the 20%, if a person is your manager and they're getting up every day, right? And I tell artists this all the time, like, if I'm getting up every day and morning, noon, and night, I'm not just answering calls. I am answering calls, but I'm answering emails, and then I'm out in the field facilitating potential opportunities. If you paid me an hourly rate, it would be way more than 20%. So the thing is that I don't get paid for everything I do. That's why I get I paid a percentage, because management is eat what you kill. I got to go out and hunt in order to get paid. So while you out chilling with your homies and you doing videos and you spending money and having fun, I'm the one that has to run around and get us business to run the business. You know, so that's kind of how you legitimize your earnings. And it doesn't always have to be 20%. Like, for me, for myself, if Drake called me right now and said, yo, Wayno, I got 5% for you, I'm jumping on that. Because you know what 5% of Drake's business is? That's a whole lot of money. You know, so I think it's all a case-by-case basis based on the manager, based on the artist, and based on the vision. Because a lot of artists, they have music, but they don't have vision. And when you have an artist that's creative, that has vision, that also has connections, that can lead to opportunities, that's the best position to be in. Rather be saying, I'm signed to this label, I got this record out, and I don't even know how to get an interview, or I got to depend on the label's radio department to take me up to any of these radio stations, etc.
You know, I think it's hard for, like, independent managers now, because you see, there's so many, like, for example, QC, mm-hmm. huge label, so much power, leverage, they got biggest stars. They have solid foundations. So if you want to be somewhat involved in their business, you gonna try to get managed by them, right?
Right.
Pusha T, managed by Stephen Victor. Right. Like a lot of people, they're managed by very powerful people. If I'm a new manager,
mm-hmm.
how could I even compete with those type of people, right? Like, mm-hmm. how could I really start developing a brand and a reputation when the people who are already established, mm-hmm. they have other artists or so much connections where it's just overwhelming that it would be a no-brainer for artists to choose that person over me?
Well, I say one of the biggest things, the word I use is adaptation, right? It's like a duck taking the water. They fly, but when they get in there, they can swim. You gotta learn how to swim. And like for myself, I didn't know anything about management. I was actually scared to do management because I didn't want, like, somebody's career being in my hands. So what I did was, fortunately enough, I had a lot of peers in the game. And it was a point in time where I didn't know a Stephen Victor. But fortunately, I got a chance to be around him and just soak up game and just meet other people. And the thing about it is when someone really sees you striving and you're making yourself available for whatever it is. I mean, I've gotten calls from people, like emails from 4 a.m, like, yo, meet me at 7, and then I hit them right back 4:45, and then they don't respond. And I never take it personal. I'm just like, yo, keep striving, keep pushing. So I say, in order to put yourself in contention with all the other bigger guys, you just gotta work. You gotta get in the game, and it's no different than any sport. You know, you won't know until you try, but you gotta give yourself a position of getting in the game and making some mistakes, learning from them, assessing them, and then building from there.
Be dedicated, learn, keep pushing,
right,
and keep moving. Thank you, Wayno. That's our show for this week, guys. Thank you for tuning into the Everyday Struggle podcast. We'll catch you here every Friday.